It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Seattle's leaving passengers stranded in dark terminals, forcing multiple airlines to cancel thousands of outgoing and incoming flights. Nearly 100 planes sitting on the tarmac with people waiting on board for hours.
The lights flickered once. That was really scary, but we were like, hopefully nothing happens. And then they flickered again and they didn't come back.
I literally spent a whole 7 hours on an airplane without food or water.
We have to go through the tunnels that are pitch black. It's scary.
It started around 1 yesterday afternoon. Atlanta's mayor saying an electrical fire caused the outage. The lights did not come back on until around midnight. That's more than 11 hours later. Get this. The airport's Chick-fil-A, typically closed on Sunday for religious reasons, came to the rescue, handing out 2,000 meals to stranded passengers. How awesome is that? Georgia Power sending a statement saying an electrical fire may have caused the outage, although it's still under investigation. Thousands of people, though, remain stranded at the airport. Still unclear when they'll be able to catch their flights. And like Steve said at the top, not a good thing to have happen 1 week before Christmas.
All right, that was Todd Pirro of Fox News, and he's talking about Hartsfield-Jackson, Atlanta International Airport, in case you've not heard that story before this morning. Sandy Rios in the morning with you. It was a power outage, and you heard the descriptions of it. So I think there's like bad news and good news. I'll do bad news first. You have to understand, and I don't mean this. Look, we have to understand the dangers in this world without freaking out. So don't stay home on account of this, because we never know what the future holds, do we? And we must live in preparation for whatever comes. So with that in mind, you know, I have to say that we know, those of us that follow what happens with the infiltration of jihadists into the country, is that they end up working at airports. They also own a lot of gas stations. That's not by accident. And so I think that, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with this, but we know that the power grid, our electrical supply, is very much on their minds. And I just find myself wondering, I don't know, because they certainly haven't declared what happened here, if somebody's not playing with just seeing how much damage they can do using the attacks on our electrical systems. And so, and with the gas stations, the reason I mentioned that, that's transportation in general. So it's not an accident that a lot of Muslims are owning gas stations. Now, that's part of the strategy. I know it sounds creepy, and it's not something you hear on the nightly news, but I'm just telling you, the experts that I know, that's what they're saying. So anyway, as you travel, and the good news is, of course, Christians to the rescue, Christians bringing food when people are hungry, even in those places. God bless. You know, that's how we reach the world for Christ. I need to tell myself that. I'm so busy doing news, I don't feel I'm helpful enough. But this is the thing. It's extraordinary efforts to save and bring wholeness and goodness to people that are going to win people. It's not, you know, a lot of other things that we could choose. So that's Chick-fil-A. God bless Chick-fil-A for coming to that airport and providing food for for those that were hungry. Remember what a hit Chick-fil-A took when they took a stand on for traditional marriage? It's pretty amazing. So God bless Chick-fil-A and the people that run it. And, of course, this week the tax bill will be voted on. And you heard a little bit of Caroline Shively at the top of the hour, but I thought this was a good explanation. I wanted you to hear it. Here it is.
A family of four making $73,000 a year gets about $2,000 in tax cuts, but the top tax bracket for the richest Americans goes from 39.6% down to about 37%. Today on Fox News Sunday, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin points out the benefit to the wealthy flattens out when you take into account all the deductions that are being eliminated.
The reason why we're lowering the top rate is because we're getting rid of lots and lots of deductions. And there's a big part of the country that has state and local taxes that we're getting rid of. Matter of fact, Schumer's been complaining about taxes going up on rich people in New York. So it's just not the case that there's all those taxes going to rich people.
Many Democrats also don't like the corporate tax rate gets cut from 35% down to 21%, saying it's too big and adds more than $1 trillion to the deficit. Senator Bernie Sanders says if Democrats retake the House and Senate in next year's elections, they'll look at rolling back all of it.
We're going to take a very hard look at this entire tax bill and make it a tax bill that works for the middle class and working families, not for the top 1% and large multinational corporations.
The bill also gives a one-time incentive to corporations to bring home trillions in profits they've been keeping overseas.
All right, Caroline Shively, thank you very much for kind of consolidating that for our interest. And, of course, ever the socialist Bernie Sanders, you know, this is the mantra. The rich are getting richer, and the poor are getting poorer, taken away from the people, the workers. That's Marxist theology. That comes right out of the handbook of Karl Marx, creating envy and strife and between people. Look at what they have. Why don't you have it? The reason they have more is because they're taking yours. It goes like that, stirring people up against each other. Classic Marxism. Thank you, Bernie Sanders and the left. But back to just the practical issue. John McCain my understanding is that Senator McCain is not doing well. He's left Washington, gone back to Arizona. Earlier reports in the news said that he would be coming back for the vote, but people that are telling me that's not going to happen, and I'm understanding he's not doing well. So I'm just saying that not only in terms of the vote for the tax bill, although I think the Republican leadership thinks they can pass it without him, but it's also just, honestly, as much as I don't like John McCain, prayers for his family, I certainly don't wish him a hard death. I don't wish him death at all. I wouldn't do that. I separate my, political opinions from my compassion for someone suffering and for their family who love him. And so we need to pray for them. And so that's what's going on with the tax bill. Chris Wallace was featuring Doug Jones, the newly elected senator from Alabama. They want to make sure that we know over and over again how wonderful he is and how moderate he's going to be. And surely he'll line up with the Republicans. Anyway, Chris Wallace asked him this question yesterday, and I want you to hear.
Your opponent, Judge Moore, continues to refuse to concede, says that this race is not over, and this week issued this video.
Today, we no longer recognize the universal truth that God is the author of our life and liberty. Abortion, sodomy, and materialism have taken the place of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
What's your reaction to that? And do you think that Roy Jones is hurting Alabama by continuing this contest, continuing this fight?
Well, I just have quit trying to figure out what Judge Moore means when he says things like that. I don't find it in the mainstream of America. Certainly don't even find it in the mainstream of Alabama. I think it's time to move on. And I think he is hurting the people of this state. I've told folks I want to try to represent everyone. I'm not going to be a senator which people are going to agree with 100% of the time. But I am going to be the kind of senator that people can talk to, that we can reason with. I want to get an education from them. I want to educate the people. So I do think it's hurting. I think it's time to move on. And let's get beyond this divisive kind of rage the war rhetoric that you hear from him and others.
What a great guy, don't you think? He'll go in and do the best he can to make sure abortion's legal for all 9 months, to make sure that LGBT rights are advanced, to make sure that there's no funding for the wall and that there are, nothing's done about illegal immigration. I mean, I think really pretty much that's what's going to happen in spite of what Fox keeps saying. Fox has done their part, I'm telling you, in destroying Judge Roy Moore. Now, I just want to say, because I know so much about this, I heard Molly Hemingway, who I love, say yesterday on Fox that the Washington Post story with all the women accusing Justice Moore, well, that it's been researched and found to be true, so, it's just settled. Well, it's not settled. If anyone's paying attention, and hardly anyone is, it is not settled. There are counters for each of the 9 accusers. Many of them have been discredited. There's only one she has not been discredited, and that's the 14-year-old girl. And there's more to say. There are some things about that I could go into, but I don't want to take our time doing that. But my point is, that's not true. It's just not true. 40 years ago, women are coming out of the woodwork to accuse Judge Moore of things that in many cases, most cases, have been refuted or countered. And yet they label it, stamp it as fact, all of it. 40 years ago, how many of you, any of you men 40 years ago Would anyone say, any woman say anything about you, accuse you of any untoward glances, touches, mentions? I mean, even if you didn't do it, could they do that 40 years ago and could you disprove it? Just asking. You know, I'd love to go around the halls of the Senate and ask that question. Where were you 40 years ago? And what, you know, was there any woman that could accuse you of anything? Even if it's not true, could you disprove it? I mean, this is really stunning to me, the destruction of a person's character. And I would say, again, remember his Vietnam vet buddy spelled out in detail how he conducted himself, Judge Roy Moore, in Vietnam as a soldier. And he said it was exemplary. The family he lived with and worked with in Australia for however many weeks it was, several, even had young girls, said that his character was exemplary. But suddenly, then 40 years ago, they find random women to say, and really, there was only two egregious accusations. The others were really nothing. I'm upset about that. And I have to say, this week, though, in Alabama, they will be recounting the military vote and the provisional votes. And that's, I think, what Judge Moore was counting on. I don't know where they are with this. They certainly are seeing the barrage of just the declarations, pushing Doug Jones out there as though it's a done deal. How dare Roy Moore hang on? He's only a point and a half behind. He needs to become within a half a point in order to be have a recount in Alabama. And there are enough votes, military and provisional, depends on who they voted for, but it's enough to close that gap. So I'm trying to give you reality. Reality is not what you're hearing on Fox. Reality is not what you're hearing on the other networks. It's so much of this is groupthink and an attempt to destroy a man that they just don't want there. You heard how Doug Jones responded to Justice Moore's laying out of what the battle is. He doesn't understand it, and most people don't, and they hate it that he talks that way. So here we go. We'll see what happens this week. This is important stuff. I'm going to be running out of time here, but I guess we should listen to this report nevertheless, Garrett Tenney, because I have several things to say about it from Fox. Let's listen.
While the president's transition team is accusing special counsel's office of bad behavior and of potentially violating the Fourth Amendment because no warrant was issued, they are stopping short of saying that anything strictly criminal or illegal was done. And that's partly because there is disagreement over who owned these emails. Were they government property or were they the private property of the Trump transition team? Now, because those emails were stored on a government server, the special counsel's office and the government agency that oversaw the emails believes no warrant was necessary.
All right, I'm going to interrupt him because I want to make this clear, if I can, that the latest story is that Bob Mueller, special investigator, obtained tens of thousands of email on the Trump transition team. The question is whether it was legal or illegal that they obtained them on one server only, just one, on one batch or whatever they call it. There were 7,000. There were all kinds of things in this email that the transition team is concerned with. There were conversations about privileged communications, about the people they were thinking about putting in various positions, their weaknesses, unguarded conversation. And so what happened was the Mueller investigative team got these email through the server and then used these email, gave them to congressmen to use it to grill members of the Trump transition team. So the transition team attorneys are challenging Mueller's team on the constitutionality of that. So we'll see what happens with that. There's a lot more to say. There'll be testimony on the Hill this week from Andrew McCabe, from Peter Strzok, I believe. I'm not sure Peter Strzok and Lisa Page are up yet, but Bruce Orr will be up. You remember his wife, Nellie, was the one that worked with Fusion GPS to compile that tabloid dossier against President Trump. Her husband was involved with Fusion GPS, too. It's really sordid. There's more to say. I'll come back to it. But next, a new poll that's really something. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Hey, here's some great news, and we could all use some great news for 2018. If you're worried about your healthcare costs or you feel like you're missing out because open enrollment is over, well, it's not too late to join MediShare. You can sign up anytime, and think about this. The typical savings for a family with MediShare is about $500 a month. Think what a difference that would make to your budget. Again, that $500 a month is the typical savings. It could be more or less for you. Definitely worth taking a couple minutes to find out. There are over 300,000 MediShare members sharing each other's medical bills, and something they're now loving, MediShare has a telehealth program that lets you log in and meet with a doctor in real time within the comfort of your own home. For everything from a cold or flu or for a prescription, you can save a lot of time and money, and it's free. Again, open enrollment might be over, but you can still join MediShare. Here's the number to find out more. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
Steve Russo with Real Answers.
Imagine having a birthday party and not remembering the guest of honor. Think about giving gifts to everyone except the one whose birthday it is. Sounds crazy, huh? But this is exactly what happens every Christmas when we get caught up in the shopping frenzy and forget why we even have a holiday to celebrate. Why not try something different this year? Have a birthday party for Jesus this Christmas. It's something you could do with friends or family. You probably already have the decorations taken care of, so all you'll need is a cake and the gifts. What are you going to give Jesus this year for his birthday? It's an important thing for all of us to think about. You may even want to talk about it with others. As you're deciding what to give Jesus, the more specific you can be, the better. Christmas is a birthday worth remembering.
For real answers to real issues, log on to Steve's website, www.realanswers.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
It appears the Obama administration may have weaponized the FBI, just like they weaponized the IRS, using government agencies to declare war on their enemies, all the while protecting their allies. Senator Ron Johnson.
We have seen now with this Lois Lerner in the IRS politicizing probably the most fearsome government agency from the standpoint of most Americans, use a political weapon. We've seen the politicization of the FBI. So we are losing confidence in these institutions that should be bedrocks of our democracy. And again, I have no idea why the FBI doesn't come clean and provide this information to Congress. What are they trying to hide? What are they trying to cover up?
Congressman Matt Gaetz, the Republican from Florida, said the country's at risk of a coup d'etat by special counsel Robert Mueller. He warned President Trump personally that Mueller's Russia investigation is infected with bias against the president. Politics aside, this is a disturbing issue that must be addressed by Congress. I'm Todd Starnes.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio. Everybody.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. By the way, that is the Messiah, the soulful celebration I play every Christmas. I love it. It's been out probably 20 years now, but it's just a lot of fun. You know, you heard Todd Starnes talk about what I talk to you about, have been for almost probably daily for the last several weeks, and that is, of course, the corruption of the FBI, not just the last several weeks. We've been on this for months. The corruption of the FBI, the Mueller investigation, all of it. So if you listen to me, you hear a lot of different things, and I'm probably, you're responding to the news that I bring to you and forming your viewpoints with that in mind. All right, well, let me give you the other side of the story here. Jackie Speier, who's a congresswoman, appeared on KQED, a newsroom on Friday, and this is what she said. I believe the president wants all of this shut down. The rumor on the Hill when I left yesterday was that the president was going to make a significant speech at the end of next week. And on December 22nd, when we are out of D.C., he was going to fire Robert Mueller. That is Saturday Massacre 2.0, referring to President Richard Nixon ordering the firing of Archibald Cox, special prosecutor investigating the Watergate scandal. Without a doubt, there would be an impeachment effort. That's Jackie Speier, Congresswoman, I think from California. All right, so Eric Holder weighs in with a tweet. He says, speaking on behalf of the vast majority of the American people, Republicans in Congress to be forewarned, any attempt to remove Bob Mueller will not be tolerated. These are BS attacks on him, his staff, that are blatantly political, designed to hide the real wrongdoing, country, not party. Chris Peronto, who was a survivor of Benghazi, we've talked about him, and you remember him from those long interviews about Benghazi, and then the guys that he was friends with, the guys that were killed. This is what he tweeted in response. Weren't you the only attorney general in U.S. history to be held in contempt of Congress? And you don't speak for me or the vast majority of the American people. You blank. Get back in your hole, rat. And then we have one more response. The White House former ethics chief under Barack Obama tweeting this, make a plan, folks. His name is Walter Schaub. Make a plan, folks. Be ready to take the streets. This is an attack on our republic. And then he tweeted after that, this weekend I'm stocking up on portable phone chargers, warm clothes, and gear needed for when we take the streets. I'm concerned the assault on the rule of law is coming over the holidays when we're distracted. It'll be a defining moment for the republic. All right, so here you have. If you listen to me, you have one view. If you listen to CNN and other outlets and you're following Eric Holder or Jackie Speier, you have a very different viewpoint. We do have two Americas, and that's what makes this next discussion important. Anna Sirok is the president of a new entity called Ear to the Ground. She's the director of Ear to the Ground Listening Project, but Anna is also a seasoned researcher. She's the president of Frontier Labs. She's also the principal of Sirok Research Group. She's a market researcher who focuses on how Americans relate to the historic notion of the American character. This is a new study funded by a brand new group called Ear to the Ground. It's a group of people that are trying to counter so much of what you see. You see in your newspapers all the time. 35% of Americans think this. 20% think this. And so much of that is phony research. And this is an attempt to actually get real research in front of the American people and set the record straight. I've asked Anne to join us this morning because she's the bigwig in this. Anne Sirok, thank you for joining us this morning.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Is there any other thing about the sort of modus operandi of Ear to the Ground Listening Project that I left out? Anything you want to say about it?
Well, I think that what we are really defined for, and we come from across the spectrum of industries, I would say, there's academics, there's people in public policy, there's market researchers like me, but we're all joined by a sense of urgency and concern that the American people aren't being listened to. So a lot of times we see market research used as a tool to further some point of view or to set up a narrative or to ding your opponent. And it's really less about insight and listening than it is about usefulness as a weapon. And so we want to return the aspect of listening to market research and giving the respect to the American people. American people wanting to hear what they have to say.
Yes, and so this is our first attempt. By the way, yeah, in full disclosure, I'm part of this. Happy to be part of it, proud to be part of it. And I want to say right up front, if you want to find out, you're going to want to know more about what Ann and I are talking about. We're not going to get to all of it. Eartotheground.us is the website, eartotheground.us. And we will be bringing probably monthly polls to find truly true polls, actual arbiters of what Americans are thinking about various things. And this first one that just came out on Friday was a poll on patriotism, which I have to say, honestly, and at first I thought, well, what's the point of that right now? But it's really much more deep and purposeful than that name captures, don't you think? Tell us what that was all about.
Yeah, you know, as we look at 2018, we wanted to understand how united as a nation are we, and what are those fundamentals that can connect us, and maybe what barriers do we need to overcome? And when you look at this sort of broad concept of patriotism, what we're really looking at is how do people feel about their country, and what do they feel still is a positive aspect, and therefore what are their own values? And so this poll is about patriotism, but it's really about the mind of the American people as they relate to the sovereignty of the U.S. and to the principles that we may have historically associated with it. Are we still the same America? Do we still have the hope that we can come together on some of these aspects? And I think if I had to sum up what we found in this poll, I would say we found that we are a fractured nation. It's not the best news. Maybe sort of intuitively you may have felt this, but when we dig into some of the data, we see just how divergent we are, even in how we define things like freedom of speech.
Yeah, and to back up just a minute before we get into that even, it really stunned me to see that conservatives and liberals, I don't know what the designations were in the poll. I know it was by party, but probably also those others. But conservatives and liberals both consider themselves patriotic. They just use different marks. Is that a fair assessment? Different evaluations
yes,
on that.
I found that fascinating as well. So people, they view themselves as patriotic. They view their neighbor as a problem, and that patriotism in general is on the wane. But it's how they're defining that patriotism is so different. What does it mean? What should patriotism entail? So I think that's where you start to see the divide coming out. And yes, we were looking at conservatives and liberals as self-described. We were also looking at age groups and even faith. So
let me read a little portion. Let me just read a little bit of this. George Barna did the survey. So he says, for instance, born-again Christians were much more likely than other people to characterize the NRA, Chick-fil-A, Hobby Lobby as very patriotic. People of non-Christian faiths were more likely than born-again Christians to argue that CNN, Planned Parenthood, and the NFL are very patriotic. So the point is that the notion of patriotism is just so different in terms of its interpretation. Give us some examples of things that really surprised you.
But first of all, when we wanted to find out what is your description of patriotism, across the board, we did see that people are defining freedom of speech right now as one of the fundamental aspects of patriotism. But when you dig into it, you see that that may be a sort of shallow term. So even if we use that term freedom of speech, we may not be talking about the same thing. So when we looked again at this divide, because it was the most strident between the conservatives and liberals, we would see sometimes 50-point drops between those two groups in terms of what is important to them. And one of the things that was most divergent was the use of nonviolent civil disobedience. So we saw that liberals were highly prizing this as one of the most important aspects of patriotism, and conservatives were ranking it at the very lowest priority. So then this idea of just simple pride in being an American, we saw that 95% of conservatives felt that's part of being patriotic, but 78% of liberals said so. The Constitution, 95% of conservatives said that was part of patriotism, 82% of liberals. So you start to see a divide there. And the fact that then when we're looking overall, do you yourself feel proud to be an American? That was an even bigger drop. 95% of conservatives felt themselves that they were proud, 78% of liberals. But overall, not looking at that distinction, 18% of our respondents, just of the American population, said that was inaccurate way to describe them. In other words, 18% of Americans are not proud at all to be American. So we're seeing some alarm bells here.
I was thinking, I thought I saw a stat, I was trying to find it, I'm going to use the terms, the only terms I know right now, that conservatives said that they love the country, but liberals said that they did not love the country. They said they were patriotic, but they would leave America. Something about they would leave America. I'll have to find this.
Yep. Yeah. Well, we looked at, would you prefer to live in another country?
Okay.
And so, yeah, that overall, that 27% of Americans and just the broader population said that they would prefer to live in another country.
27%. 27% said they prefer to live in another country. I think that's actually good idea. I'll editorialize. I think that would be a good idea if they did, but I digress.
You're starting to see a population that's unsure about how they feel. This war against Americanism has eroded people's sense or confidence in their own country. And I don't want to say that, you know, conservatives are good and liberals are bad in how they view patriotism. We saw, you know, a couple of warning bells for conservatives, such as this idea of being a culture warrior. The liberals responded that 22% of them felt as though they're culture warriors, so wanting to go out and engage in the culture and sort of fight this battle. Only 10% of conservatives said that was something that was accurate about themselves. So not only do we have different definitions, but that willingness to engage maybe is not there on the conservative side as much as on the liberal.
I think there's this is a different conversation for another day, but I just think there's a unawareness, a lack of awareness, a busyness with life that's consuming them, and they don't understand the dangers here. I think this is pretty interesting, and a conservative said that the NRA is very patriotic. That was one of the highest-ranked choices from them. Moderates said it was the U.S. Supreme Court, and liberals said the Democratic Party. Planned Parenthood was one percentage point behind the Democratic Party in liberals' estimation of very patriotic brands. And that's just, Planned Parenthood is patriotic. That's just,
what it is that we are also seeing that our brands that have nothing to do with sort of Americanism are now falling into line on one side or another. So it's not just that you're existing in this world where we have divergent political ideologies. We're now sort of being asked to choose our brands based on those, or our brands are being asked to take a side. So that's another interesting aspect that marketers will have to deal with and have been dealing with, and sort of we've seen how that has fallen out. But so now we're seeing that something like Planned Parenthood is falling into line as one side of the battle, and being associated as patriotic. So it's quite Starbucks. 22% of liberals felt that Starbucks is a very patriotic organization. 7% of conservatives. So,
I had a family member who went to a very highly reputable Christian school, who asked me not long after graduating from there, she was just musing. She didn't have any point to make. She just said, you know, what does it mean to be an American? What is our identity? I don't really know. And I thought, this girl went to private schools. She went to Christian university, and she doesn't know what it means to be an American. And we've done a terrible job of branding. Let's talk about that. You're not exactly an old woman. And, it's fun because I interviewed your mother in Chicago years ago when education started going off the rails. So your mom's a warrior. Your mom's a culture warrior. So, and how did you survive your own education? Because you have an Ivy League education, Cornell University, Johns Hopkins. How did you escape the grip of ignorance, really? I'll could call it that.
Well, first, I would say, actually, God's grace. but I do feel as though I was, reminiscing about how my mother had been on your show. And, I grew up with a strong female conservative role model. She was active in fighting in the front of education. And, a feminist might be galled to hear it, but I saw a stay-at-home mother who was in the trenches fighting these battles. And that was just the best example I could have possibly had about standing up to the culture even then.
Yeah, Anna, that's probably the best Christmas present you could have given a lot of parents, because they worry about their adult children who've gone off the rails. And so you're an example of one who has not. You just gave us the reason. We need more conversation about that, but we're out of time. Now, let me just say the eartotheground.us, eartotheground.us is the name of this new entity. We're going to put the poll. We'll put these two articles, one from PJ Media, one conservative HQ, on our Facebook page so that you can read about it. And Sirach, thank you. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. In an unprecedented move, literally, President Trump has formally recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. He's also announced that the U.S. Embassy in Israel will be relocated from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Congress passed the Jerusalem Embassy Act in 1995, which required the U.S. embassy to be moved to Jerusalem. But every previous president enacted a waiver clause to sidestep the move. Until now. Jerusalem is Israel's capital.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Women and men alike find themselves in despair after an abortion. Every woman who had an abortion was for a short time a mother, every man a father. But afterwards, they're all people in pain, anger, sadness, relationship problems. These often accompany an abortion. But there is hope. Call 866-482-LIFE. Your call is confidential, and you'll be talking with someone who has already been where you are and found the way out. 866-482-LIFE.
Washington Watch advances a culture where human life is valued and religious liberty thrives.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch, right here on the American Family Radio Network, inviting you to join us each weekend for the weekend edition of Washington Watch for the latest from our nation's capital on what is happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. You'll hear from policymakers, congressional leaders, and others each day, 4 p.m. Central Time. Be there.
Folks, I know what you think. I want to be able to get my money. I'm not giving my money to anybody. I'm not giving it to the church, not giving it to the ministry. I'm hoarding it, I'm keeping it, and I'm going to build. And when it gets so big, I'll build another silo, and I'll build another silo after that. And I'm just going to keep growing it, because when I retire, I'm going to have more money and I know what to do with. But look, it's important that you consider permanent income. The key word is charitable gift annuity. You notice I don't say charitable annuity. I never leave the word gift out. It's a gift.
A knowledgeable AFA Foundation representative will gladly explain the nuances of charitable gift annuities and answer your questions. Find out about charitable gift annuities when you call 800-326-4543, extension 345. 800-326-4543, extension 345. Or by visiting afafoundation.net.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The U.S. government has known for 13 years that the Muslim Brotherhood's mission in America is, quote, destroying Western civilization from within, unquote, by our hands. Consequently, none of these Sharia supremacists should have been allowed anywhere near our government. So, when then-Representative Michelle Bachmann and four of her colleagues asked the State Department in 2012 about the ties its Deputy Chief of Staff, Huma Abedin, had with the jihadist Muslim Brotherhood, their concerns deserved careful scrutiny. Instead, Ms. Bachmann especially was vilified as an Islamophobe, and the questions went unanswered. Yesterday, Judicial Watch revealed that Ms. Abedin was allowed to remove and presumably destroy papers about Muslim engagement when she and her boss Hillary Clinton left the department. Inquiring minds want to know, did Abedin actually enable the Muslim Brotherhood's infiltration? Yet another example of the Clinton team's betrayal of our national security. This is Frank Gaffney.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning.
I'm Ajit Pai. I'm the chairman of the FCC. Recently, there's been quite a bit of conversation about my plan to restore internet freedom. Here are just a few of the things you'll still be able to do on the internet after these Obama-era regulations are repealed. You can still gram your food. Quality. All right, a real selfie, or just... You can still post photos of cute animals, like puppies.
Aww.
You can still shop for all your Christmas presents online. Yes, got that bulk deal on fidget spinners. Yes, those eclipse glasses are so cheap. You can still binge watch your favorite shows.
Whoa.
still stay part of your favorite fan community.
And everything else you ever did on the internet. Like everything. All of it. All of it.
All right, that was the FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai. I have told you a portion of this story, but not enough. It's bothered me for weeks that we haven't gone in depth with it. But last week there was a vote on whether to retain net neutrality. And Ajit Pai, who is the new commissioner for the FCC, he was on the commission before, but he was the lone conservative on that panel, and they did some very egregious things during the Obama administration, which we'll touch on. But Ajit, in trying to push doing away with net neutrality, came under such intense pressure. People were picketing his home, calling out his children, accusing he's Indian-American, calling out, saying terrible things about him, making it very personal, which is what the left always does, an attempt to personally destroy him. That's why that funny video produced by the Daily Caller is so courageous and funny. What a guy is all I got to say. And, of course, the issue is the issue. We'll put that video, by the way, on our Facebook page so that you can share it and watch it. But what is the story here? The left has been telling us the prices on the internet are going to go up, the speed is going to slow down, and you won't be able to do all these things. And, of course, Ajit was mocking all of that hysteria. But Seton Motley is really at the center of understanding this. He's the founder and president of Less Government. I've known Seton for a long time, but I don't think you've ever heard him speak. And I've asked him to join us this morning. Good morning, Seton. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Really good. And I appreciate what you've written on this. I think your last piece on this really was excellent. By the way, we'll put that
Thank
on our Facebook page, too.
Appreciate that. In fact, I'm writing one this morning. Net neutrality is dead. Long live the internet. which kind of sums up what we're dealing with here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ignorant hysteria on this, which pretty much sums up the left on any issue you want to discuss. But this is a technological issue, so really the ignorance is rampant. There's so much to unpack. One of the things I want to talk about, because you mentioned it, was the fast lanes. Oh, my gosh, you're going to have fast lanes for rich companies. They already have millions of fast lanes. These morons don't know how the internet works. They're called CDNs, content delivery networks. And every giant bandwidth-consuming company pays for them now. And they've paid for them throughout the history of the internet, well, since they started inventing them, when they started getting big enough to matter. Netflix and Google's YouTube, Google owns YouTube, Netflix and YouTube consume more than half of all the bandwidth in this country.
Wow.
Now, can you imagine the speeds the rest of us would be getting if they were on the same highway as all of us?
Wow.
It would be debilitatingly slow.
Yep.
It would be insane. So what they started doing was developing content delivery networks, which aren't fast lanes. They're just they're alternate thoroughfares that get the major bandwidth hogs, the 18-wheelers, off the highways, the streets, so we can move at a reasonable speed. And
so,
they've existed forever.
All right,
and,
so that's
and what net neutrality did was it prevented the broadband companies from charging the bandwidth hog companies for building them.
Okay, so now,
So what happened was, is we would have paid more for our connections to augment the profits of Google and Netflix and Facebook and Amazon, because they wouldn't have to pay for their CDNs.
You know, Seton, actually, you know, Google was really, really against this decision that the FCC made last Thursday. And they removed that video that I just a video that we just played a tiny portion of.
Yes, the Daily Caller with Ajit Pai, who, by the way, I don't know him very well, but he's a great guy. He's hilarious. He's totally plugged into pop culture. He's a really good guy.
Well, but the point is that YouTube and Google removed that video for hours on the web right before that vote, which
is because they're neutral. Because Google and Twitter are neutral.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, that this is always the left comes up with these positive terms for the bad things they want to do. So net neutrality sounds like good. And usually it seems like it's buried in all of the talk about speed and price and all that is the real intent. What do you think, Seton, the real intent under a Barack Obama of messing with the internet.
That's exactly right. And it predates Barack Obama, actually. Yeah, they're very good at naming very bad things. Net neutrality was created in the... Here's the history of the internet. And by the way, all they did on Thursday was restore the regulatory system that existed from 1996 to 2015. Gee, how'd the internet do then? Nothing in human history has grown bigger, faster, better than the internet under that regulatory regime. So this hysteria is additionally absurd. Now, net neutrality, one of the last major good bipartisan things to come out of D.C., in 1996, the Bill Clinton administration and the Republican Congress looked at the nation internet and said, it's so new, we're going to leave it alone and see what happens. Well, what usually happens when government leaves something alone, it explodes. And the internet in 20 years went from what's that to 1/6 of our entire economy. Well, the left saw this development skyrocketing so quickly and realized they didn't have any government hooks in it to reel it in. So they needed to come up with a fairy tale to get people to engender support for putting the government's hooks into the internet. And that fairy tale was network neutrality. It was created in 2002 by a college professor named Tim Wu, and was pushed ever since. Google spent a ton of money pushing it throughout the 2000s. Then they kind of realized they created this leftist monster that wanted to take over everything on the internet, including them, and they started to back off. I don't know if you remember this, but right before Al Franken got famous for groping, he came out and said, I think net neutrality should apply to Google and Facebook and Twitter, too.
No, I don't remember that, but that must have been a moment. So that was like a turning point for them.
Before he got popped that's when Leanne Tweeden came out. So anyway, but what I'm saying is Google funded all these people and then realized, oh my God, they want to do it to us too. So they kind of backed off. So there's another college professor who's an avowed Marxist. Please pardon the redundancy. His name is Robert McChesney. He's a communications professor at University of Illinois, Urbana, one of the satellite schools in Illinois. There's a quote, and I'm not getting it directly, but it's close, just from memory. The first step of net neutrality is this. The final step, the ultimate objective, is to eradicate the media capitalists from the phone and cable companies and divest them from control. How very Venezuela of them. What they want to do is they want to use net neutrality to choke off the private sector internet and then replace it all with government so the government will be our sole internet service provider.
Wow. Where's Facebook on this?
Which is very similar to Obamacare. Remember what Gruber said?
Yes.
Obamacare gets us to single payer in 10 years. Well, that was the objective. That's the ultimate objective of net neutrality.
You know what this also?
And what Obama did under the fig leaf, in the Trojan horse of net neutrality in 2015, was what's called reclassified the internet. Now, what that means is, and he did it without Congress, so it's dubiously legal because Congress needs to reclassify, not the FCC, the unelected bureaucrats there. And what they said was, okay. That bipartisan thing that happened in 96 was Title I. They moved it to Title II. Well, that's 1934 landline phone line law. And that's for a monopoly. For people who are old like me, Ma Bell, AT&T was a monopoly, and the government regulated the heck out of it and taxed the heck out of it. Well, by moving the internet into that regulatory scheme, they could now regulate it like a phone and tax it like a phone. It gave them huge new powers over the internet just by doing that. All a GPI did was say, no, we're going back to Title I where we were from 1996 to 2015. That's all he did. Nothing else. He didn't do anything to net neutrality. In fact, right now, there are Republicans in the House and Senate begging the Democrats to come to the table. They have legislation written, or partially written, that basically outlines some net neutrality things that are completely innocuous to which no one objects. You know, you can't block from legal content. You know, all these simple things. And, of course, the Democrats don't want that because that's not the objective of net neutrality for them. The objective of net neutrality is to title to it and then regulate it further and then tax it and ultimately drive out all the private providers and have government be the sole internet service provider.
See, we're going to run out of time. So I'm going to ask you a quick question. Does this decision have anything whatsoever to do with giving control of the internet to ICANN? Does that affect that in any way? Is there any loop or any connection
with that? No, ICANN's a separate thing. That's a nonprofit that exists globally. Now, we had it under our control,
right,
under our Commerce Department via a contract, just a business signed contract that said you handle it's the names and numbers. It's where you, but when you buy a domain name, that's from whom you purchase the domain name. And what Obama did was he basically ended the contract with our Commerce Department. So now it's kind of hanging out there in the wilds, and the concern there is, can China come in? Can Russia come in? Can North Korea come in and influence that? And if that happens, then you start having problems, because if a totalitarian, authoritarian regime doesn't like your website, he can buy that website from ICANN and have their domain be the prominent one and not yours.
Yeah, as
so
I
that's a separate issue. That's a whole other can of worms.
Yeah, well,
Obama opened.
Yes, and we did talk about that quite a bit. So, and I think that happened in this last year, close to it, of the presidency. So maybe that'll get addressed again too. But let's come back to net neutrality. Is this a done deal? Is the FCC's decision on Thursday a done deal?
Oh, well, it is, as far as then call the lawyers. A bunch of leftist groups, a bunch of leftist elected officials, they're talking about now leftist state attorneys general and are going to file suit to try to overturn this decision. So that's going to have to wend its way through the system, and we get to waste millions and millions of dollars of government money, fending off the big government types with a whip and a chair. So it's a done deal as far as right now. The way the internet is regulated is much better than it was on Wednesday. The question then becomes, does that new stasis become the stasis after all the lawsuits are done?
Well, Seton, it's only the struggle. It's only the struggle. That's what, the left just loves to fight. They love to drain, create chaos. So this is the thing they love to do. It's not, while the rest of us have to twiddle our thumbs and seem helpless. But let me just say this.
And just try to go about our lives and then with as little of government impediment as possible.
Yeah, exactly. But good luck with that. But it's really shifting. The ground is shifting, and we just pray that really that freedom will prevail on all of these issues. Let me just say that.
Who knew that Trump would be more conservative than Reagan?
I know. Isn't that the truth? I mean, honestly, Seton, it is pretty amazing, isn't it?
I thought he was going to be pretty conservative, because I heard him talk about how he thought taxes were the main problem, and then he spoke to a bunch of businessmen on the campaign trail and realized regulations were more the problem. But boy, he is coming in and just, my favorite example really quickly, 4 years ago, Governor Perry runs on closing the Department of Energy, and 4 years later, Trump names him head of the Department of Energy. That's about as close to closing it as you can get.
That's right. All right, Seton Motley, again, is the founder and president of Less Government, and his last article really explains this well, more than we got to, actually. It's called Net Neutrality. The Left is Always Wrong, So Stop Listening to Them. We'll put it on our Facebook page. You can read it and share it. It's very understandable on this issue of net neutrality. All right, Seton, it's great to connect with you again, and hopefully we can talk again soon.
That'd be great. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Have a great week.
All right, you too. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.